From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, this is Free Speech Radio News. It's Wednesday, the 27th of May, 2009. Thousands take to the streets around California to protest the high court's decision to uphold a ban on same-sex marriage. We'll go to Georgia, where repeated calls for President Saakashvili to step down have also divided the nation's media outlets. And Israel's parliament passes a preliminary reading of a controversial law that would make it illegal to question whether it should be an exclusively Jewish state. I'm Aura Bogado. Stay tuned for those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. A suicide car bomb in Lahore, Pakistan, killed 24 people today, including 14 policemen. The blast left over 200 injured. FSRN's Gabe Matthews reports.
The suicide bombing is the fourth serious attack in Lahore, a city near the Indian border, widely considered to be the country's cultural capital. Despite the attacks, violence is a relatively new phenomenon in the city, which is located on the opposite side of the country from Taliban strongholds. Today's bomb destroyed a police facility and damaged a military intelligence building. Wasim Akhtar is a member of the National Assembly of Mutahida Qawmi Movement Party, the only party that boycotted the SWAT peace deal. He says he doesn't want to wait until a SWAT-like situation emerges in Lahore, and that the government should immediately begin to take measures to stem the violence, because the Taliban already has some regional support. No group has accepted responsibility yet, but most critics believe the attack is Taliban retaliation for the government's military operation in SWAT. I'm Nathan Moore, reading for Gabe Matthews in Pakistan.
North Korea says the truce ending the Korean War is no longer valid, and that it will attack South Korea if the U.S. continues to search its ships. This according to North Korea's state-run media. The threat comes in response to South Korea joining an international effort to block ships carrying nuclear materials bound for North Korea. A major union in Argentina is on nationwide strike today to demand government protection against the global financial crisis. FSRN's Marie Trigona reports from Buenos Aires.
Members of the Central of Argentine Workers and other union federations shut down Argentina's capital, Buenos Aires, and protested nationwide. Protesters want the government to implement measures to protect job security and fair wealth distribution. Claudia Aguilera, a social service worker, says that salaries for public employees in Argentina failed to cover living costs. She says the workers end up paying for the crisis with firings, salary cuts, and with public policies that aren't useful. Subway workers also joined the protest, shutting down the city's subway lines and demanding that the government recognize an independent grassroots union formed earlier this year. Marie Trigona, FSRN, Buenos Aires.
General Motors is on the brink of bankruptcy after its bondholders rejected the company's debt exchange offer today. FSRN's Matt Pearson has more from D.C.
In a final effort to avoid bankruptcy, GM offered its bondholders shares in a restructured version of the company in exchange for their debt. But the bondholders openly criticized the deal, saying they were being treated unfairly. They say GM's offer revealed preferential treatment for the United Auto Workers Union, which also holds unsecured debt with the company. With bankruptcy imminent, bondholders plan to dispute the company's restructuring plan in court. Now GM faces the challenge of reorganizing in the midst of a rapidly changing industry. Bruce Belzowski is a professor at the University of Michigan's Transportation Institute.
Now you're starting to look at what kind of advanced technologies will they be able to put into play to actually meet the requirements that the government is demanding of them by 2016.
The GM Board of Directors will meet this week to discuss the company's next steps. Matt Pearson, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
As General Motors nears bankruptcy, fellow automaker Chrysler is optimistic about emerging from its own financial troubles. The smaller company, which filed for bankruptcy on April 30th, is expected to finish its court proceedings sooner than expected. The company is awaiting federal approval on its sale to a group that includes Italian company Fiat, labor organizations, and the U.S. and Canadian governments. Chrysler says quick completion of the sale could save hundreds of thousands of jobs and prevent economic shockwaves in the Midwest. In the wake of last week's election defeat of measures to raise $5 billion, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is proposing drastic cuts to social programs. Kelly Ramirez has the story.
The Republican governor proposes reducing the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, which provides AIDS medications to the poor, and eliminating the Healthy Families Program, which provides health care to nearly 1 million children from low-income families. Members of the Service Employees International Union have begun a vigil outside the Capitol to protest proposed salary reductions for workers providing in-home care for the elderly and disabled. Schwarzenegger's most drastic proposal involves saving $1.3 billion by eliminating CalWORKS, a program that helps unemployed single mothers to find jobs. Assembly Speaker Karen Bass, a Democrat, favors across-the-board cuts rather than eliminating whole programs. The newest deficit estimates show the state is even further in the hole than originally thought. The governor will release plans for another $3 billion in cuts on Friday. Kelly L. Ramirez, FSRN, Oakland.
And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News from Eugene, Oregon. I'm Jess Burns.
More than 170 people were arrested in San Francisco Tuesday for blocking intersections as they protested California's Supreme Court decision upholding the ban on same-sex marriage. Attorneys have already filed a federal lawsuit to overturn the state ban. And as Africa Jones reports, LGBT groups in San Francisco aren't only protesting against the court's decision, they're also stepping up the fight to make same-sex marriage a reality.
Emotions ran high as thousands of people poured into California streets to voice their opposition to the state Supreme Court's decision upholding Proposition 8. At one rally in front of San Francisco City Hall, LGBT activists, politicians, and families took turns expressing their anger and determination.
In 2010 or 2012, we're going to get equal rights back, and that's how we're going to get even.
We are raising three fabulous children. Our family deserves the same rights as anybody else.
To those who would try to take away my marriage and relegate our family to second-class status, I say read my finger!
Last May, California's Supreme Court ruled that an earlier ban on same-sex marriages violated the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. But in November, voters passed Proposition 8, which reinstated that ban. Now the court has ruled that although gays and lesbians have the same rights as heterosexuals, the law allows a simple majority vote to change the state's constitution to restrict marriage. It also ruled that the marriages of 18,000 same-sex couples who were married while it was still legal last year will stand. Terry Stewart, the chief deputy city attorney for San Francisco, represented same-sex supporters for state Supreme Court cases. She says the court got it wrong.
This decision held that if the voters vote to write an exception into equal protection and say, well, yeah, there's equality except for you, then that's okay. It renders the Constitution in California pretty much impotent. If the second somebody doesn't like the principles being applied to a particular group, they can simply put it on the ballot and take it away.
Same-sex marriage foes rejoiced in Tuesday's ruling, saying that they will now turn their attention to educating the public on the benefits of traditional marriage. But advocates for same-sex marriage say that laws restricting marriage in the U.S. deny LGBT couples and families their legal rights. Peter Leahy brought his two adopted sons to the rally. He says what happened to his family illustrates the importance of marriage for everyone.
My partner died in 2003 in an accident. Because we weren't legally married, we had no right to know that he'd even passed away. His family had his body cremated and removed from the state before we were even notified that he had died. Our kids don't get Social Security checks that other families who have parents die would get.
Supporters of same-sex marriage have already begun collecting signatures to add another proposition to the 2010 ballot, which would again legalize same-sex marriage in California. Terry Stewart said she'd like to see changes made to the state's constitution as well.
There's a real question whether our constitution is broken. And I'm hoping that we will also put a measure on the ballot to change the constitution in a way so that this can't happen again to anybody, not just lesbians and gay men, but any minority group or unpopular group.
Africa Jones, FSRN, San Francisco.
What do we want? Equal rights!
What do we want now?
Thousands of people also demonstrated in West Hollywood last night against the California Supreme Court's ruling. A crowd gathered at a stage to hear speakers rally same-sex marriage supporters as an enormous mass of people assembled at the corner of Santa Monica and San Vicente. Among them was actor and producer Drew Barrymore, who told FSRN she would do whatever it takes to make sure same-sex marriage is finally honored in the state of California.
My name is Drew Barrymore. I'm here to protest Prop 8. Families deserve to be loved. People deserve civil rights. We cannot take a step backwards now, in this moment. Please do whatever you can to reverse this.
Why did you decide to come out here today?
Because I was raised by gay men and women, and I am who I am because of them. And I cannot live in a world where they don't have the rights and the liberties that they deserve, and there are children out there who need loving homes. This is a cause that is dearer to my heart than anything I could ever imagine. So I will go and I will fight and I will rally and I will do whatever it takes.
How did you find out about today's decision?
I found out by my friend in a meeting at 9 o'clock this morning. And I knew what I was going to do tonight.
How did it make you feel when you heard about it?
Angry. It makes no sense. It literally is illogical and cruel and absolutely unnecessary. This is crazy. We've taken giant steps forward. Why do we want to take a step backwards?
And that again was Drew Barrymore. I caught up with her at the demonstration against the California Supreme Court's ruling on same-sex marriage. You're listening to FSRN. You can follow us at twitter.com/FSRN. From demonstrations in California, we turn to protests in the country of Georgia, which have kept that nation's parliament shuttered for more than 6 weeks as demonstrators attempt to force the resignation of President Mikhail Saakashvili. Tuesday saw tens of thousands take to the streets in numbers not seen since protests began on the 9th of April. But the polarization between political forces is also being played out in the country's national media. The three major television stations are now firmly pro-government. And as Jacob Resnick reports, the two smaller opposition channels only reach the capital city, Tbilisi.
It was the 8th of April, the day before thousands of people were expected to rally in the streets, demanding the resignation of Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili. Tengiz Mezarnashvili, a Medi Television's executive director at the time, said senior management called him into a meeting to discuss the next day's demonstration coverage.
In order to prevent broadcast of any objective images of the size of the demonstration, I was told that camera operators were not to take any panoramic shots so that nobody would have the real picture.
In 2007, police used tear gas and rubber bullets to violently disperse a peaceful political rally. Leading up to the April 9th demonstration, the highly influential Georgian Orthodox Patriarch appealed to police on national television not to use violence against the protesters. Mezarnashvili says that Emedi Television's upper management ordered that section of the speech cut from its evening broadcast. For many at the station, this was the last straw. 64 employees signed a petition accusing management of enforcing pro-government bias at the station. Mezarnashvili says he was fired because he refused to withdraw his name from the petition. Emedi's top executives did not respond to the Georgian newspaper story about the incident, and Emedi's news director has not responded to Free Speech Radio News' request for comment. Emedi Television hasn't always been pro-government. Under its former owner, it had been a very critical opposition voice. But after its former owner, the billionaire Badri Patakatsishvili, emerged as a political rival to President Saakashvili, the station was seized by armed government agents. Shortly afterward, the government reopened the station. But who actually owns the station now is the subject of continuing litigation and is very troubling for media experts like Nino Danelli, a researcher at the Georgian Institute of Public Affairs.
We know from journalists, we know from producers that owners creates orientation and ideology of media, and you don't know who is the owner, it is very much problematic, and it is one-dimensionally going against any kind of democratic values and freedom of speech.
Since Emedi reopened, a defense ministry press officer has been brought in to take control of the news operation. The move was criticized by Reporters Without Borders, a free press advocacy group. Today, opposition parties have a voice in two small television stations that broadcast in and around the capital city, Tbilisi. But veteran political journalists like Gerbenazzi complain that the pro-opposition stations are just as biased as the main channels.
It's not that just the pro-government stations are doing this. The opposition-led stations are just the opposite extreme. They are doing the same, but in the opposite direction. In political reporting, there is no middle ground.
That view is shared by media experts like Dinelli, who say the country lacks a culture of freedom of speech. She says the only solution is to strengthen civil society and change the partisan culture of both the pro-government and oppositional media.
Both sides are doing very bad mistakes towards democracy and liberal values. So now civil society is feeling that it is their stand and to take and again start to rebuild civil liberties in the country. And this creates some kind of hope.
Georgian public broadcasting has been a target of ongoing street demonstrations as well. Protesters say they are angered by what they see as unabashed bias favoring the ruling party. Earlier this month, 23-year-old journalist Tika Anguladze quit her job at the public broadcaster after she was warned by her producer that the police had taken an interest in her. Anguladze had leaked photos of armed police stationed inside the television building where she worked. The photos were broadcast by a rival TV channel. She says she shared the photos because she wanted people to know that police were keeping an armed presence inside the station. The police say they were protecting the journalists from angry demonstrators outside, but Angeladze says that many of her former colleagues were unhappy with the police presence but were afraid to speak out.
My opinion is that the public broadcaster's reporting is not objective, and many journalists there think the same. But they never say this aloud, and they probably have the same reasons that I had myself when I was working there. There is control and intimidation.
Tia Sikanova was a longtime political correspondent for Amedi Television. Last month, she quit her job in protest and now hosts a talk show on the pro-opposition channel Maestro.
It's important for the government to control Imeri because while they say there are two opposition-oriented channels, Maestro and Kavgasia, and what more do you demand? These channels only cover the Bisili area while Imeri has the possibility to reach all of Georgia and give objective information. People living in the outer regions, they are cut off from receiving objective information.
That may change soon. This month, Maestro announced it will be expanding its broadcast range to include much of the western part of the country. That would make it the first pro-opposition channel to broadcast outside of Tbilisi since the government seized Imeri in 2007. But veteran journalists like Zviad Kuridze, a former television reporter who now trains journalists all over the country, says that strengthening the opposition media isn't what's needed. Quality journalism is.
We need to increase the level of the professionalism in Georgia. It doesn't matter if they work for Rastavi or Maestro. They need to be united in adhering to the highest journalistic standards.
Jacob Resnick, FSRN, Tbilisi.
Hundreds gathered outside the Israeli parliament today in protest of a first round of a reading of a controversial bill passed Wednesday. If ratified, the law would make it illegal to even question Israel as a strictly Jewish state. Hassan Banoura has more.
The law was submitted by the right-wing nationalist party. Under it, anyone who publishes anything that questions Israel as being a Jewish state will face imprisonment for at least 1 year. Protesters want the law revoked. They are also demanding that Israel cabinet ministers cancel the draft law banning the commemoration of the Nakba, the Arab word for catastrophe. The draft law will be submitted for Israeli parliamentary approval later this week. If this law is approved, people convicted could face prison sentence up to 3 years. The proposed bill is aimed at Palestinians who have Israeli citizenship and not those living in occupied Gaza and the West Bank. Dr. Jamal Zahalka, an Arab member of the Israeli parliament, commented on the new bill.
This is a stupid, racist, and very rude law that is unprecedented in the world. This law will control the feelings of people. It's a rude law in particular because Israel has expelled our people and destroyed our villages, and now they want to steal our cry of pain.
Palestinians mark Nakba every year on the 15th of May, as this is the day when Israel was created after hundreds of Palestinians were killed and the majority of the people living in that territory lost their homes and became refugees. Nadim Nashif, president of the Association for Arab Youth, Baladna, a Palestinian NGO in Israel, says that this law will not stop the commemoration of Nakba.
We will continue to commemorate Nakba. No one can force us not to do so. For us, it is an important part of our history and heritage. As we commemorated Nakba in the past, we will do it again in the future.
The draft bill was brought forward at the instigation of the radical ultra-nationalist Israel Biteinu party of Avigdor Lieberman, now Israel's foreign minister. At the same time, Lieberman's party has put forward controversial draft legislation to the ministerial committee. It states that people who refuse to declare willingness to serve in the army or perform alternative service will not be entitled to Israeli citizenship, as Israel Biteinu put forward in its election slogan, Ghassan Bannoura, Afasaram, Bethlehem.
Conservative groups are already staging their fight against Supreme Court Justice nominee Sonia Sotomayor. They're pointing to comments the judge made at two conferences, one at Duke University, where conservatives interpret that Sotomayor indicated that policy is made on the Court of Appeals, the other at UC Berkeley, when Sotomayor indicated a Latina would often reach a better decision than a white male when it comes to determining race and sex discrimination cases. But as FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports, conservatives might have a difficult time opposing her legal decisions, as they are far from radical.
Sotomayor's most high-profile case involved baseball. During the seven-month-long strike of 1994 and 1995, her decision put players back to work. President Obama said she helped save the sport.
In a decision that reportedly took her just 15 minutes to announce, a swiftness much appreciated by baseball fans everywhere, she issued an injunction that helped end the strike.
Another high-profile case was just heard by the Supreme Court. It's an affirmative action case in New Haven, Connecticut. White firefighters sued because the city altered the requirements for promotion to include black and brown firefighters. She was one of three members of the Second Court of Appeals that upheld the city's efforts at affirmative action. Conservatives point to this case as a reason to label her a liberal activist judge. But legal scholars point out that Sotomayor did not write the decision, nor did she push for the case to be heard. Michael Fox is an attorney at the law firm Ogletree Deakins in Austin, Texas.
She obviously went along with it. She didn't dissent. She didn't feel strongly about it. But, you know, I'm not sure that's something that you can sort of tag on her.
Fox primarily represents employers. He says Sotomayor's record on employer and labor law is balanced.
I guess I found her someone who seemed to be on both sides of issues, which is where you would expect a judge to be, who was deciding disputed facts, and one who seemed to be applying the law as what I would consider to be far out of the mainstream.
In 2003, Sotomayor supported employees in a disability case, issuing a setback to employers who challenged perceived disabilities. On the other hand, she sided with employers in several cases, including one against labor unions. Sotomayor has heard more than 400 cases while serving on the Second Court of Appeals. A number of them involve business. Observers say she, again, is not out of the mainstream, although she does tend to support consumers more. One case was a class action lawsuit against Visa and MasterCard. She decided that credit card holders deserve $3 billion in compensation because of price fixing. John Coffey is a corporate law professor at Columbia University. He says this decision differed from how other courts ruled on similar cases.
That was against the grain of most other circuits' decisions in class actions, and I think it would be regarded as a liberal, pro-consumer decision, which may bother a few people in the business community. I'm sure that among antitrust lawyers. They were not happy with it. On the other hand, I think it's exactly the kind of decision that can be easily defended.
She also wrote a unanimous decision that said the largest California pension fund could sue the New York Stock Exchange for tolerating misconduct, which hurt small investors. Sotomayor has not decided on any cases on hot-button issues such as abortion or gay rights. But anti-abortion groups have come out in opposition, even though she upheld the Mexico City policy, which prohibits U.S.-funded international organizations from offering abortions. It's a policy President Obama has already reversed. Legal observers who have examined her decision say she is sensitive to the people's plight, but frames her decisions around the law. Leanne Caldwell, FSRN, Washington, D.C.
A Los Angeles activist has been released after being held captive by armed assailants for nearly a week in the Philippines. She was freed along with two others. All three were on a medical mission in the country's northern region. Human rights activists claim the assailants are government troops and are now demanding the Obama administration withdraw support for the Philippine regime. FSRN's Leilani Albano reports.
According to the human rights group Carapatan, Melissa Rojas, a former resident of Hollywood, was abducted in La Paz, Tarlac by eight gunmen on May 19. Filipino nationals Juanito Carabeo and John Edward Handok were also taken. Gusela Hilo, vice chair of Bayan Los Angeles, an alliance of progressive Filipino groups in the U.S., says the three were working as volunteer health workers in La Paz, Tarlac.
Melissa was actually trying to resist being taken and asking, screaming out, "Why are you doing this to us?" And also screaming out her name, most likely in efforts to make sure people knew and could hear that something was happening to them.
Bayan alleges that the gunmen worked for the government. They waged a successful online petition on Facebook and Twitter that they said led to Rojas's release on Sunday.
It proves that us here advocating can make a difference.
Rojas took part in the International Solidarity Mission 4 years ago. It investigated the disappearance and murders of more than 800 activists, farmers, lawyers, and religious leaders allegedly committed by government forces. These days, Arturo Garcia, with the LA-based Alliance for a Just and Lasting Peace in the Philippines, says Arroyo is silencing her detractors under the guise of fighting terror.
So everybody's a target. Those who oppose Arroyo will be picked up, summarily executed, or being detained.
Human rights activists say the situation is likely to worsen as the U.S.-backed Arroyo administration seeks to consolidate its power by changing the nation's constitution so that it has a perpetual regime. Hilo says U.S. residents should demand that the Obama administration withdraw any funding that U.S. taxpayers are giving to the Philippines and the military. Bayan will be holding rallies today in four U.S. cities on behalf of all victims of political violence. For FSRN, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
You've been listening to FSRN, which is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. We're online at fsrn.org, and you can follow us at twitter.com/FSRN. Today's newscast was produced by Vinod K. Joes and Puck Lowe. She's sitting in for Catherine Comp. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our headlines editors are Nell Abram and Jess Burns. Our tech team at KPFA in Berkeley today includes Rose Katapchi and Oscar Hernandez. From Pacifica Station, KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.